Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce the Vice President of the United States, Jesuit Joe Biden.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order, because the global order is changing again.
I believe we, and particularly you, your class, has an incredible window of opportunity to lead in shaping a new world order for the 21st century. A new world order for the 21st century in a way consistent with American interest and the common interest.
And what he means by the new world order, they're just ushering in the old world order. Greetings and welcome to Mystery Babylon News Radio on October 29th, 2014. My name is Walt Stickle, and I'll be the host for the next 45 minutes, and my co-host is going to be Tom Fresh of Inquisition Update of First Amendment Radio, reading the foreword of Chris Pinto's foreword in Washington in the Lap of Rome, 1888 by Justin Fulton. Tonight's broadcast is part two, The Jesuit Brothers of the Pyramid, Shaping Events in 2014. We will be going over the foreword of Chris Pinto in Washington in the Lap of Rome. And this is a series to give us what is going on in 2014. Because when we come to 1700s, I'm going to use a broadcast that Alan Bailey made up on TalkShoe. You can go up there and listen to it right now. You go to TalkShoe, Bald Eagle, and his call is called Restoring America. And you might scroll down to the middle of the page, and it's episode 144. This is where we will be talking about the events of 1700s that led up to 1776, and it'll be quite clear what's going on in 2014. I'm going to let Tom introduce again Chris Pinto. I think it is something we should acknowledge. Chris Pinto is an exceptional researcher. And again, I want to recommend The Hidden Faith of the Founding Fathers. If you've listened to it twice, listen to it again. It's only 3 hours, but in 3 hours, Chris Pinto connects all the dots and leaves out some missing parts of history. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Tom. Thanks for coming to the broadcast.
Welcome to Inquisition Update. My name's Tom Fress, and I'll be your host for the next hour. You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and it's my pleasure to be here. And now I wish to continue our reading and discussion of the new book we've just started, entitled Washington in the Lap of Rome. Washington in the Lap of Rome. This book was first published in 1888. The author's name is Justin Dewey Fulton, and the new publication of this book is being done by Christian J. Pinto, the author of A Lamp in the Dark and The Hidden Faith of the Founding Fathers and other great documentary works about the Protestant Reformation and about the Jesuit-led Counter-Reformation. Much thanks to Christian J. Pinto to put this book back in the hands of the American people. And what I am doing today is continuing our reading and discussion of the 70-page foreword to this new publication, this new reprinting of the book by Christian J. Pinto. Christian is a Reformed Roman Catholic, and he's well aware of the Jesuit order and their attempts to control this country and to bring it to the knee, bring it to its knees, and to bring it to the feet of the slippered toe of the Pope, to kiss him as a god. Now, all of this sounds ridiculous to those who have not studied this. I know it sounds ridiculous, but the facts are monumental. They are centuries old. They cannot be refuted. And Christian J. Pinto lays out these facts in a way that will stun the American people.
Now, Tom will read the subtitle, The Jesuits, the Engineered Core of Hell.
They will just pay attention. Under the subtitle, Jesuits, the Engineered Core of Hell, author Christian J. Pinto continues. He says, The Engineer Core of Hell was the name given to the Roman Catholic Jesuit order by the 19th century author Edwin A. Sherman. His book of that title describes the very disciplined and militant nature of Rome's most nefarious order of priests, the Jesuit order, who have been hated and feared by nations throughout the world for nearly 500 years. In May of 2011, the first Jesuit priest in the whole history of the United States was appointed to be chaplain of the House of Representatives. Imagine! It's not only difficult to comprehend that a Roman Catholic would be elected as the chaplain of the House of Representatives, but now a Jesuit priest, for crying out loud? This just indicates just how ignorant this country as a whole is of the importance and the power and the role that the Jesuit order plays in the world. We now have a Jesuit priest as a chaplain of the House of Representatives. So the country ought to be outraged. If it knew anything about the Jesuit order, they would demand that not only this Jesuit priest who presides over the House of Representatives and is the moral leader of the House of Representatives would not only be dismissed from his office, but would be dismissed from this country and all of his brethren Jesuits with him. But they are the power of Washington, D.C. And believe you me when I tell you, just being the chaplain of the House of Representatives is not a reflection of the amount of real power that they wield in Washington, D.C. It goes far, far deeper than that. Pinto continues, he says, only a detailed study of the Jesuit order could fully inform the reader of the significance this event has for our nation. While our space and time is limited, we give the reader a brief history to consider. Speaking about the Jesuit order now, founded by Ignatius Loyola in the 16th century, the company known as the Society of Jesus was commissioned by the Pope in 1540 as a military order for the purpose of launching the Counter-Reformation. Okay? It was a military-style assault on the Protestant Reformation. This movement was a plan to destroy the Protestant Reformation and bringing professing Christians back under the power of the Pope. Ultimately, the Jesuit plan extended to all the nations of the earth to which their missionaries have gone, pursuing their aim for the absolute papal domination of the world and all its inhabitants. Those who study Rome and world events today are convinced that the Jesuit-led Counter-Reformation has never ceased and is a war waged by the Jesuits to this very hour. Prior to the 20th century, the word Jesuit was held in the same regard that we have for the word Nazi today. The Jesuits were known for their ruthless determination to do whatever necessary to overthrow Protestantism, to destroy the true gospel, and to bring all governments under the power of the Pope. The end justifies the means is the famous motto of the Jesuit order, and has been given them license to turn every wicked work into a meritorious act of faith. Stop for a minute and just consider the phrase, the end justifies the means. In other words, the Jesuit philosophy is that whatever end you have in view, if you view that end, that desired end, to be good, then whatever means you choose to achieve that end is also good. Now, this simply means that if the desired end is that the Pope shall rule the world, which is the very reason the Jesuit order was created, if they believe that the end, that the Protestant Reformation be utterly destroyed from off the face of the earth, if those ends, those desired ends, are perceived as good, then whatever means to achieve that end is also good, including holocausts, inquisitions, world wars, man-made depressions, presidential assassinations, papal poisonings. Every means, no matter how wicked, is good if it serves the ultimate aims, the ultimate ends of the Jesuit order: to destroy Protestantism and to raise the papacy to global governing supremacy. The end justifies the means. That's their motto. And if a Jesuit happens to stand up and argues, where did you get that information? All you need to do is say, Mr. Jesuit, I've studied your history. You cannot deny that you have used the most wicked means imaginable to destroy the Protestant Reformation and to elevate the papacy to global supremacy. You cannot deny. Your history cannot deny your motto, the end justifies the means. The end justifies the means is their famous motto, and has given them license to turn every wicked work into a meritorious act of faith. That's right. Killing heretics, assassinating Protestant pastors, or Protestant presidents and kings and princes and queens, is a meritorious work according to the Jesuit order. The repeated attacks of Protestant kings and queens of England is a meritorious work according to the Jesuit order. The assassination of John F. Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln by the Jesuit order was a meritorious work to the Jesuit order. And now we have a Jesuit who is the chaplain of the House of Representatives. How blind must be the American people today? Catholic writers and historians have repeatedly noted the aim of the order from its beginnings and its drive to enforce papal authority. The following quote comes from a well-known Jesuit historian, Malachi Martin. Quote, "The perennial enemies of the papacy never could forgive Inigo and his Jesuits as long as they were on the Pope's mission, fulfilling that sacred oath of obedience even unto disgrace and death. His Jesuits were Pope's men. Their first main targets, the new Protestant churches pullulating throughout Europe. Precisely the vital issue at stake between the Catholic Church and the leaders of the Protestant revolt was the authority of the Roman Catholic Pontiff and the preeminent primacy of his Roman Catholic Church." Unquote. Another quote, "The Jesuits carried the battle right into the territories of these papal enemies. They waged public controversies with kings, They debated in Protestant universities. They preached at crossroads and in the marketplaces. They addressed municipal councils. They instructed church councils. They infiltrated hostile territories in disguise and moved around underground. They were everywhere, showering their contemporaries with brilliance, with wit, with acerbity, with learning, and with piety. Their constant theme? The Bishop of Rome is successor to Peter the Apostle, upon whom Christ founded his church. Any other churchly institution is rank heresy, the child of Satan. Unquote. You see, they take their warfare everywhere in disguise, and they have destroyed Protestantism in this country. This conviction, based on the unbiblical lies that have been compounded by Roman writers and forgers for more than 1,000 years, drove this dark company of Jesuit priests to employ every form of deception and wickedness on behalf of their false god, the Pope. After the exposure of the famed gunpowder plot of 1605, the esteemed British lawyer Sir Edmund Coke said, quote, "I never knew a treason without a Romish priest, but in this there are very many Jesuits. The superintendent of the Jesuits in England, Creswell in Spain, Baldwin in Flanders, Parsons at Rome. So the principal offenders are the seducing Jesuits, men that use the most sacred and blessed name of Jesus as a mantle to cover their impiety, blasphemy, treason, rebellion, and all manner of wickedness." Unquote. This quote from Sir Edward Coke was due to the results of his realization that the gunpowder plot to blow up the Protestant British Parliament in 1605 with 36 kegs of dynamite was simply an act of the Jesuit order, a concerted act of the Jesuit provincial in England, Spain, Flanders, and Rome. Do you see why Roman Catholicism was made illegal in the colonial period in the United States, where the Protestants and the Puritans, simply on pain of death, warned the Jesuits not to come here? Do you understand now why Roman Catholic priests were forbidden to say the Mass? Do you see why they were not permitted to vote or hold any powerful political office? Was it religious bigotry, or was it a reaction to Roman and Jesuit history? We've forgotten why the Puritans hated and feared the Jesuit order, and why they made Roman Catholicism illegal in the colonies. The author continues, "While they often present themselves in romanticized histories as champions of liberty, the truth is that the Jesuits are known as the harbingers of chaos and the destruction of every generation since their founding. Through the Middle Ages, the Jesuits were repeatedly driven out of the countries of Europe, many of which were Roman Catholic countries. They were banished from Japan by the shoguns and even suppressed by the popes because of their subversive activities. Even one of their own, Malachi Martin, acknowledged the controversial history of the Jesuit order. He said this, quote, "Periodically, in their more than 400-year existence, the Jesuits were expelled and banned from various countries: France, Germany, Austria, England, Belgium, Mexico, Sweden, and Switzerland. And when brute force was used against them, they went underground or packed their bags and departed to wait the day that they could return. they always returned, unquote. In his book, The Babington Plot, by J.E.C. Shepherd, he gives us the scope of Jesuitical intrigue, proving that their agenda as the Pope's men has continued into modern times. Quote, between 1555 and 1931, the Society of Jesus was expelled from at least 83 countries, city-states, and cities for engaging in political intrigue and subversive plots against the welfare of the state, unquote. So all of their ousters throughout history, of all the nations and cities and city-states, history is rank with examples of the Jesuits being kicked out of every country upon which they ever set foot. Should we expect that the Jesuit orders would be welcome in this country? That they should raise up universities to educate Roman Catholics and then put them in high seats of political power in this country, when their history reveals that they've been kicked out of every country for engaging in political intrigue, subversive plots to overthrow Protestant states? I think we'd better take a more serious look at the Jesuit order and what role they play in politics today. So here we can clearly see that the Jesuits have been kicked out of virtually every country upon which they ever set foot, by the people and by the governments, for their political intrigue. Their area of operations is politics, and they incite wars, and what is accomplished through those wars is a secret agenda for the Pope. Number one, to kill off heretics, those who the papacy says are heretics and who are not likely to cooperate with the Pope and his new world order. And it's done under the cover of war. And this defines all of history since the founding of the Jesuit order. Even the popes suppressed the Jesuit order, because Roman Catholic countries, Roman Catholic people, Roman Catholic kings and queens demanded their suppression. And the only nation on the earth who has never raised one single finger against the Jesuits is the United States of America. And what might my listeners think that the Jesuits have done with this country, being free to roam the most hallowed halls of governmental power in this country? What have the Jesuits wrought through the United States of America? Now, continuing where we left off yesterday, says Pope Clement XIV banished the order in 1773 and was poisoned by them for it, dying a slow and agonizing death. But they were resurrected again in 1814, and when news of this reached America, one of our presidents, John Adams, said, quote, I do not like the late resurrection of the Jesuits. They have a general now in Russia in correspondence with the Jesuits in the United States, who are more numerous than anybody knows. Shall we not have swarms of them here, in as many shapes and disguises as ever a king of the gypsies assumed? I have lately read Pascal's letters over again, and four volumes of the history of the Jesuits. If ever any congregation of men could merit eternal perdition on earth and in hell, it is this company of Loyola. Unquote. Now that's a president of the United States, John Adams. He had read Pascal's provincial letters. He had educated himself about the Jesuits. He read four volumes of history of the Jesuit order throughout the world. And he said, if ever any congregation of men could merit eternal perdition on earth and in hell, it is this company of Loyola, the Jesuit order. Now, there have been countless books, essays, and histories written about this nefarious and diabolical company, the Jesuit order, whose trail of blood can be traced from the atrocities of the Inquisition to the St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre, to the revocation of the Edict of Nantes, to the massacre in Piedmont of the Waldenses, to the mass murder of Orthodox Serbs in Croatia, and the Holocaust of World War II. Their own historians have acknowledged their global influence for hundreds of years. Quote, they had a part to play in every political alliance in Europe, an influential post with every government, an advisory capacity with every great man and each powerful woman. There was nothing anywhere they could not undertake, as they said, quote, for the greater glory of God, unquote, under obedience to the Roman Pope. They were in every European, African, Asian, and American country where the slightest burgeoning of Catholicism was possible. All their influence was wielded in pursuit of the papal will. Unquote. In other words, they're everywhere. And their very means for existence is to increase the papacy's power in the world. And they've accomplished their aim. Now, under the Jesuits in D.C., in 2011, we read that, quote, Jesuit Patrick Conroy was sworn in May 25th as House Chaplain, making him the first Society of Jesus priest to hold that position, unquote. On May 25th, 2011, not just a Roman Catholic priest, but a Jesuit priest by the name of Patrick Conroy was sworn in as House Chaplain. Now, this may not seem significant to anyone who does not know the history of the Jesuit order or their significance and their power and controlling influence in our government. But it's just one more mark, just one more straw in the mounting haystack of evidence proving that the Jesuit order now has not only got control of our government, but is not even so worried about working behind the scenes anymore. They're ready to take a public position. It means they've come to the end of their mission. They're ready to proclaim this country Catholic. Now listen to what Pinto says now. The Jesuit Conroy was appointed by Republican Speaker of the House, John Boehner, along with Democratic Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, both of whom are devout Roman Catholics. Boehner said, quote, Pelosi and I have gotten a chance to know Father Pat, and we're honored that he has accepted our invitation to serve as chaplain. We are blessed to have his guidance and wisdom, and we discharge our duties and fulfill our obligations, unquote. So we have two devout Roman Catholics, Boehner and Pelosi, both from the Democratic and the Republican parties, just destroying the myth that there's any real opposition between the two political parties in this country, and they're appointing a Jesuit priest to serve over the House of Representatives, to be the spiritual leader and advisor of the House of Representatives. It's just, well, to those who know what this really represents, it's incredible that in this once Protestant land, a Protestant land in the colonial period that forbid the practice of Roman Catholicism and heralded the danger of the Jesuit order everywhere they went, Now we have one who is the house chaplain. Now, Conroy is the second consecutive Roman Catholic priest to hold the office, and the first Jesuit, as shown above. He previously served as chaplain of Georgetown University, Jesuit Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., for the span of a decade, a fact that will mean more as you read Fulton's book. But as we will show in the rest of our introduction, the insertion of a Jesuit in the House of Representatives is simply the largest progression of Rome's infiltration into the halls of the United States government. More importantly to us as Christians, it shows the ongoing fulfillment of Bible prophecy. What does Bible prophecy say? What does the Bible have to say about Rome? Warnings from heaven. He says the following scriptures are well known to the students of Bible prophecy concerning the apostate church, forewarned in the book of Revelation in the Bible. Quote, "And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, Come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication." Unquote. And another one, quote, "So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth." Revelation chapter 17, verses 1 through 5. These powerful passages have for nearly 2,000 years been associated with the city and church of Rome. The chief reasons are these passages. Quote, "And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus." Revelation chapter 17, verse 6. "There is no institution on earth that has so greatly persecuted and murdered the true witness of Jesus Christ as the Church of Rome. For those interested in documentation on those who were killed in past centuries, we recommend the well-researched essay by David A. Plaisted, Estimates of the Number Killed by the Papacy in the Middle Ages and Later. In it, he cites 19th century author Charles K. Moore for his work in the Roman Catholic religion, who said, quote, "Papal Rome has shed the blood of 50 millions of Christians in Europe." Unquote. While the numbers vary from one historian to the next, the general consensus seems to be that some 50 million Christians were murdered during the Inquisition era, while approximately 18 million non-Christians, made up of Jews, Muslims, and unbelievers, were also massacred. According to 19th century author Dr. W.C. Brownlee, quote, "The Church of Rome has spent immense treasures and shed in murder the blood of 68,500,000 of the human race to establish before astonished and disgusted world her fixed determination to annihilate every claim set up by the human family to liberty and the right of unbounded freedom of conscience." Unquote. Who does Rome pursue with the sword and the faggot and the flame? God's people. 68,500,000 of the human race. And what crime were they guilty of? Enjoying the liberty by which Christ hath made us free. Rome wants God's people to be bound and chained to the papal yoke, and today is going to be no less bloody than all of the previous centuries of the papal inquisition. Holy Roman Inquisition is going to come to this country because God's people have fallen fast asleep and are unaware of the Roman Church's history. And we hope to resurrect that history, educate God's people, and call for a holy revival of the Protestant Reformation before it's too late. Mr. Pinto continues, he says, with these figures, one can add the Holocaust under Adolf Hitler, the 20th century Holy Roman Emperor, said by the Vatican to be the son of the Catholic Church who died while defending Christianity, the slaughter of more than a million Orthodox Serbs in Croatia during World War II under Roman Catholic Archbishop Stepinac, who was later beatified by Pope John Paul II, and the communist murders under the Jesuit-trained Joseph Stalin. While the evidence is still emerging, we could also add the vicious genocide of 800,000 Tutsis in the 1994 Rwanda genocide, a horrible atrocity blamed on the racial manipulations of Catholic missionaries who spent 100 years fomenting the hatred that ultimately led to mass murder. To some, it might seem too incredible that Rome could be involved in all these horrors, and many more. Yet the scriptures tell us that the great whore of Revelation would be guilty of the greatest bloodshed in history. Quote, and in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth. Revelation chapter 18, verse 24. If the above prophecy is true, and we have no doubt that it is, then it makes sense that we would find a common link to a single system that is responsible for the great atrocities that have befallen humanity throughout history. Is it likely, as some speculate, that a future city of Babylon could become as blood guilty as Rome? Furthermore, could it be argued that the blood of all that were slain could be applied only to ancient pagan Rome, as the Jesuit scholars have argued? Surely the Caesars of old have been sorely outmatched by the colossal horrors the apostate church has wrought through the Dark Ages, and to this present time, as saints and sinners have been butchered on behalf of papal supremacy. The next part of this prophecy describes yet another important detail, which is perhaps the smoking gun for most interpreters. Quote, and here is the mind that hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. Revelation chapter 17, verse 9. Nearly all teachers of prophecy throughout the generations of the church history have acknowledged that the city of seven hills or mountains is Rome. Even the Jesuit scholars in the footnotes of the original Douay Rheims Bible, the Catholic Bible, admitted that Rome was the culprit, but applied it to the old pagan Roman Empire, as we said before. There are some who argue that the woman sits on seven mountains rather than hills, thinking that this is an inconsistency. But in Greek, the word for mountain, oros, also applies to hills or mounds that rise up from the earth. Perhaps most importantly to the subject of this book is the great harlot's manipulation of the kings of the earth. Quote, and the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. Revelation chapter 17, verse 18. And I beseech my listeners to name any kingly power on this earth, whether he be president of the United States or of Argentina or of any other name, any other nation on this world, if they will just Google that name and also the name, the word Pope, and then click on images, you can literally go to the internet and see photographs of all the world's leaders all taking their turn, dressed in black, and if they be female, dressed in black and wearing veils over their faces, taking their turn and going to the Vatican to pay their obeisance to the Pope. And I assert to my listeners that the Bible is God's word. If it reveals any truth to us, we know that they get their orders from the Pope too. They have committed fornication with her. Do you know what fornication means in the Bible? God has a way of describing things in human terms so that we can understand. We all know what fornication means. But in God's use of the word, it describes unlawful communication with false gods. And is that not what the kings of the earth commit when they go to Rome wearing black and veils and kneel before his face and kiss his feet and to kiss his ring and to call him Holy Father as though he were a god, and obey him as though he were a god? Truly, they have committed fornication with him.
Thanks, Tom. And that brings us to the end of part two, The Jesuit Brothers of the Pyramid, Shaping World Events in 2014. I'd like to close the broadcast with Revelation 17:4 and 17:5. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. Let no man deceive you. 1 John 3:7. Little children, let no man deceive you. He that doth righteousness is righteous, even as he is righteous. Ephesians 5:6. Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. 1 Corinthians 3:18. Let no man deceive himself. Let no man deceive himself. If any man among you seems to be wise in this world, let him become a fool that he may be wise. 2 Thessalonians 2:3. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin, singular, be revealed, the son of perdition, singular. Let no man deceive you. And boy, in the day we live in the times we live in 2014, the deceptions that have been set before us, we have to meditate on God's word day and night. There seems to be a deception in Rome.
Seems to be that this world is in a mess. Seems to be all life's just a test. Seems to be we think we've lived our lives, the best thing's clear to see, that only God will judge and bless. Seems to be, seems to be, that we've lived our life in lies seems to be. We are born and then we die seems to be. Life passes, it just flies, and it's clear to see that only God's truth will survive.